This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Dirt Show. I am so pleased with the letters that I got based on yesterday's show, where I displayed the kind of museum of horrors, the history of anti-Semitism, to try to demonstrate that what we're seeing on college campuses today is part of a long, long, long history of bias and prejudice and discrimination, and that these Hitler youth that are now marching and calling for death to America and death to Israel are part of a long, long history of anti-Semitism that, you know, goes back to pogroms in Europe, to quotas against Jews, and ultimately to the Holocaust, that these Hitler youth who are marching, which they think for decent reasons, are part of a long, long historical trail of horrible bigotry against the Jewish people, and most recently against the nation state of the Jewish people. So I'll read some letters later on. But now I really want to turn to, as you know, I've said before, I have red lines regarding my commitment as a Democrat. I always think of myself as a liberal Democrat, more a libertarian than a leftist, a constitutionalist, somebody who cares deeply about civil liberties and civil rights. And mostly I've been associated with the Democratic Party and Democratic candidates. I'm not a card-carrying member of the Democratic Party, and I generally don't contribute to the Democratic Party. I contribute to specific candidates, and I've contributed to Republican candidates ranging from, you know, Governor Weld to Governor Romney to members of the Senate, Ted Cruz. I contribute to all of my former students, even if I disagree with them. I just am so proud that these were people who learned from me and I learned from. So I'm always happy to do that. But I've talked about red lines, and one of the red lines that I've talked about is if the Biden administration withheld necessary military equipment from Israel. Now, we're not sure what the situation is. There's a lot of ambiguity about it. They have certainly delayed the shipment of some necessary material, but the White House hasn't confirmed that they're withholding it. And they're certainly doing it to try to prevent Israel from winning its war against Gaza. They say it's because they're worried about civilian casualties. That's just total nonsense. There are very few actual civilian casualties. I'm talking about real civilians. I'm not talking about people who help Hamas. You know, Hamas always says, oh, you know, like a third of them are women. Sure, there are women who are carrying guns and sending rockets and killing people. They're children. Yeah, they're 18, 19, 17-year-old terrorists. The number of actual innocent civilians who didn't vote for Hamas, who doesn't support Hamas, who didn't applaud what happened on October 7th, very, very low, very low, probably the lowest of any war in modern history. But even if you take the Hamas figures, the ratio of civilian to combatant deaths is lower than in any war in modern history, lower than any war the United States, Great Britain, France, Italy, Canada ever fought. And so, you know, the civilian casualties are an excuse for not wanting Israel to defeat Hamas and win this war. When you just think of the civilians, the actual civilians, the babies, and of course you cry every time you see a baby on television. That's the Hamas strategy. It's called the dead baby strategy. They put their babies in the way of Israeli fire. They use them as human shields. They use them to protect their terrorists. And then when they inevitably become collateral damage, Hamas quickly takes the babies and the children and shows them on CNN. CNN, you know, just guilelessly shows them and doesn't give any explanation. Usually has some Muslim or Arab woman, a reporter, quote, reporter, from Gaza, telling one side of the story. Often they get their information from Al Jazeera and other sources. And of course, it encourages Hamas to just continue doing this. So the most absurd part of what is being delayed, again, we don't know whether it's being delayed, being withheld. We know that the Secretary of Defense has said explicitly that they're doing this in order to send a message to Israel not to go into Rafah. Israel should go into Rafah. Israel should destroy the tunnels in Rafah. It should destroy the three or four battalions of Hamas. These are fighters. These are terrorists that continue to send rockets, killed four Israelis the other day. They should do it. They should do it while doing what they've been doing, minimizing civilian casualties and moving civilians away. You know, I had an idea that hasn't been accepted, but the idea was to cordon off an area within Israel itself in the Negev and allow a million civilians, real civilians, if you can find a million real civilians from Gaza, to stay in Israel for 6 weeks, have asylum there, get good medical care, good food, good tents, air conditioning, and then Israel could go in and just decimate Rafah, destroy all the tunnels, destroy all the military buildings, and destroy Hamas, as well as capture Sinwar and other of its leaders. I don't know why Israel won't do that. Both sides don't want it. I guess the Israelis don't want a million Gazans. Nobody wants a million Gazans. The Egyptians don't want them. The Jordanians don't want them. And the Gazans don't want to leave Gaza because they're afraid they'll be expelled. The United States could guarantee that within 6 weeks or 8 weeks, whatever the number would be, the million people would be returned to Gaza. Remember, most of them don't live in Rafah. Rafah is relatively small. Most of them live in the north. They have been camping out in Gaza, so it's not as if they're being dispossessed from their homes. They're being moved from one type of encampment to another type of encampment. And let's also never forget whose fault this whole thing is. There was a ceasefire in effect on October 6th, and Hamas broke the ceasefire, murdered 1,200, raped, beheaded, kidnapped, burned alive. That's what started the whole thing. You wouldn't know that if you watched the Hitler Youth in their demonstrations marching, you know, calling what Israel's doing genocide. If Israel committed genocide, then so has the United States, Great Britain, and every other country in the world, including the United Nations. You know, there have been more deaths resulting from NATO incursions than these incursions. Of course, it's not genocide. Genocide is the deliberate, willful killing of civilians. What happened in the Second World War was genocide. And yesterday, of course, commemorated Yom HaShoah, the Day of Remembrance of the Holocaust. And to his credit, President Biden gave a really good speech. For the first time, he unequivocally condemned anti-Semitism without mentioning the fake issues of anti-Arab, anti-Muslim, Islamophobia, anti-Palestinian American. There is no such thing on American college campuses. They are the heroes. It's the Jews that are subject to discrimination. Sorry, I forgot to turn off my phone. I'm traveling. With the one hand, yesterday, President Biden made a very good speech about anti-Semitism. And on the same day, it was announced that he was withholding some arms and weapons necessary for Israel not only to attack Rafah and destroy Hamas, but to defend itself. And the irony, and I say irony, but it sounds like really unbelievable stupidity, is that among the weapons that Israel is withholding are so-called smart bombs, the kind of bombs that are capable of minimizing civilian damages. So here's the message that this administration seems to be sending Israel. We don't want you to kill civilians, but we're going to send you a bunch of dumb bombs that do kill civilians because they can't distinguish, but we're going to withhold the smart bombs that would make you more able to kill Hamas members without killing civilians. That's the punishment we're going to impose on you. It's not a punishment on Israel. That's a punishment on the civilians of Gaza. What is the administration thinking when they withhold smart bombs? That's the one thing you want Israel to have enough of, so that there can be no reason for not minimizing. Israel does everything in its power to minimize, but if it doesn't have smart bombs, if it has to choose between not sending a bomb at all at Hamas headquarters or Hamas fighters or Hamas terrorists or Hamas rockets, if it has to choose between sending no bombs at all, which it won't do and it shouldn't do, or sending a dumb bomb, it's going to send a dumb bomb. But if it has a third choice, hey, there's a smart bomb. The smart bomb can go into a window, can hit a terrorist individually. Smart bombs are used in that way. And the United States is withholding smart bombs. One of the senators at a hearing yesterday asked about that, and he got no good answer. He said, why are you withholding smart bombs? Other senators, you know, complained about anything being withheld. When your ally is fighting a war, whether it's Ukraine or whether it's Israel, you don't withhold weapons. They're not withholding weapons from Ukraine. And they are withholding weapons from Israel. Look, Ukraine is not perfect. It has Nazis in its army, and it has killed civilians. Obviously, it's fighting much more of a defensive war, and it's more vulnerable to Russia than Israel is to Hamas in an existential way. But nonetheless, I mean, no army is perfect. If the United States fought the Second World War and was supplied by some, you know, mega country, which you have to make one up, they wouldn't get any bombs if they were bombing Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Tokyo, Berlin, Dresden. The number of civilian deaths caused by the United States and Great Britain in the Second World War are in the millions, And as Albert Einstein, I read the letter yesterday, as Albert Einstein wrote to somebody at the end of the Second World War, the better people of Germany are responsible. They're not innocent civilians. They voted for Hitler. They brought him to power. If there had been an election in 1943, Hitler would have won 90% of the vote. Overwhelming, just like Hamas would win 90% of the vote. If there were an election today, interesting enough, they would win a much higher percentage on the West Bank, because the West Bank hasn't suffered, than they would in Gaza, because Gaza has, of course, suffered from being used as human shields, the citizens of Gaza. But this is my red line. And if it turns out to be true that the United States is actually withholding important weapons from Israel necessary to defend itself, and I will announce that I can't vote for a party or a candidate that denies Israel that kind of weaponry. And, you know, yes, I feel strongly about Israel because of my background, because I'm on the phone with Benjamin Netanyahu several times a week, just most recently yesterday, speaking to him. I speak to him all the time, and I care deeply about Israel. But I have to tell you, I would feel very strongly if the United States withheld weapons from other allies. And I think that this would send a message. It sends lots of messages. If the United States is withholding smart bombs from Israel, it sends a message to Taiwan, don't count on America. It sends a message to Hamas, don't make a deal. Up the ante, keep changing the deal as they did the other day, because why should you make a deal? The United States is negotiating for you. It's keeping Israel out. It's making Israel engage only in limited forays into Rafah. And they shouldn't. They should be able to go in. In fact, I think Israel should have tried to end this war even more quickly than it did, with shock and awe, with overwhelming military activities the way the United States has done. You know, gradual, slow wars which are a function of trying not to lose support of the United States, of the international community. You know, Israel can never count on the international community, the UN. The UN is Hamas with fancy clothing. But the United Nations, as I think it was Avi Eben, the Israeli representative to the UN during the 67 war, who said, if Algeria introduced a resolution at the UN that the earth was flat and that Israel had flattened it, it would win 140-35 with 60 abstentions. And he could tell you which countries would vote every way. You can predict the votes of the United Nations, just like you can predict the votes of the International Court of Justice based on who's on it and what countries they come from. Will the same thing be true of the International Criminal Court? We'll wait and see. I've been advising the Israeli government in relation to the International Criminal Court for many years now. And I'm very interested in seeing whether or not the International Criminal Court and the International Court of Justice destroy their own credibility by violating their own rules and coming down with decisions against Israel that are totally unwarranted and unjustified. But let's focus on the United States. The vast majority of Americans support Israel, and they do not support Hamas. Do not think that the loudmouth Hitler youth that are marching against Israel represent the American public opinion. They don't. They don't even represent the public opinion among young people of college age. And they don't even represent college students and university students. There are thousands of them, but there are hundreds of thousands of students. I would say the vast majority of whom would just like to take their exams and graduate. I was supposed to go to the graduation at Columbia next Wednesday. I was hoping to go with an acquaintance of mine who was getting an honorary doctorate and who was being protested by the Hitler Youth because he was Jewish and because he had once served as the dean of the president of Tel Aviv University, also served as dean of Georgia Tech or other American places. There were two Jews getting honorary degrees, and they were both going to be protested, one just because he's Jewish and the other because he's an American Israeli Jew. And so that graduation has been canceled. So many other graduations have been canceled. I would suspect the vast majority of college students, particularly among the graduates, are a little pissed off at those who would destroy their ability to graduate, especially since this class is the same class that was denied graduation in high school. Well, wait until law school, but who knows, medical school, but who knows. By the way, my daughter graduated law school the other day. I probably am not allowed to say this, but she was first in her class. And I'm very proud of her. And she doesn't want to be a lawyer. She's an actor and a very good one, professional actor. But she did go to law school and she did graduate last week. But a lot of kids who graduated, including my granddaughter, who graduated medical school, medical and PhD from Stanford, a lot of these schools are not having graduations. And a lot of the schools are not having classes. And a lot of the schools, students can't go on the campuses. And a lot of the schools, Jewish kids, particularly if they're identifiably Jewish, if they wear a Star of David, if they wear a kippah, or if they self-identify as Jews or as Zionists, they are threatened. And not only are Jews threatened, but of course we saw that janitors at Columbia University were held prison and by rich kids. And I've been trying to, I know the names of the janitors, some of them that have been held in prison, but I'd love to get their contact information if anybody knows them or is listening to me, because our group, Heard a Jew, We Sue You, is not limited to Jews. These janitors, I would sue pro bono on their behalf, these rich kids, and give the money to them and maybe some of it to charity. Kids who hurt people as part of these demonstrations have to pay consequences. They can't just be allowed to get off the hook. Most of them, already deals were made in colleges. Oh, we're going to give them amnesty. Why? Why? Other schools have said, hey, we're giving in to you. We're going to appoint two Palestinian professors without regard to whether they're qualified or not. We're going to admit five Palestinian students. Now we have quotas for Palestinian students against Jewish students, against, you know, many universities still have quotas against ethnic Catholic students. Too many Irish Catholics, too many Italian Catholics. Harvard did for many years. You couldn't get into Harvard if you were an Irish Catholic or Italian Catholic on the same basis as if you were of a different religion. So, you know, universities have had quotas for a long time. Now they're being formalized in a direct way. The number of Jews admitted to Harvard has gone down to less than half of what it was as the result of DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Its lack of diversity, lack of equality, and exclusion is what really is going on at these universities. And these academic disciplines, intersectionality, all of that are just excuses for having quotas. And that's what universities have. And by the way, virtually every university is violating the Supreme Court decision on not allowing race to be used as a criteria for admission. I can tell you, I know for a fact that most universities are expressly violating the Supreme Court's decision. They don't like it. They're violating it. Professor Lawrence Tribe told them to and gave them advice about how to do it, much like a Southern person would give advice in the 1950s for how to circumvent Brown versus Board of Education. Oh, but what we're doing is good. It's to admit more Blacks, not fewer Blacks. No, it's wrong when you circumvent the Supreme Court decision and do it secretly and in a hidden way. It's so obvious they're doing it. They're not doing a very good job of it. The questions that they ask for admissions is so clearly an invitation to disclose your race and allow your race to be taken into account in admission criteria. And I'm absolutely certain that's the case. But let's go back to Israel. So, you know, yes, my red line, if it's true that there is a permanent withholding of necessary ammunition, my red line has been crossed for two reasons, morality and second, stupidity. Again, stupidity. You withhold smart bombs in order to minimize the number of civilian casualties? Duh. I mean, what is your IQ? What are you thinking? How do you justify that? How do you explain that? But the morality is the far more important one. But I'm waiting. I'm not making a final decision. I'm waiting to see whether it's a temporary hold, whether it's a permanent hold, how much we're talking about. I hate the idea. And the idea is enough right now for me to say, if I had to vote today, I would not vote for President Biden today. If I had to vote today, based on what I know. Good speech on Holocaust Remembrance Day. That's a speech. I judge people by their actions as much as by their words. Words are important when you're the president, but if you're withholding weapons, if you're causing Israeli soldiers to die in order to send a message, it's the wrong message. And it's not a message that I can support. So I'm not with you. I'm not with you. I'm against you. Open mind. Let's see what the facts are. Let's not jump to conclusions. Let's see if it really is the case. Let's see what Israel does. Let's see what the reaction is if they go in even more deeply into Rafah and they do destroy Hamas. And, you know, the other myth that you hear so much, it's such a stupid statement. You hear it over and over again, particularly on CNN, over and over again. Oh, maybe you can defeat an army, but you can't ever defeat an ideology. You can't defeat an ideology. That is so historically incorrect and such nonsense. Of course you can defeat an ideology. What do you think happened to Nazism? When Hitler died, when Goering died, when Goebbels died, when Himmler died, Nazism died. And the Germans became allies of the United States when Japan surrendered and the Japanese army was destroyed and Tokyo was destroyed and Hiroshima and Nagasaki were destroyed. What do you think happened to Japanese fascism? It disappeared. Who became America's greatest allies in the post-war period? Germany and Japan. The same thing could happen in Gaza and on the West Bank. If instead of allowing Hamas to continue to dominate there, it was completely destroyed, and then those areas were rebuilt the way the Marshall Plan rebuilt Europe and the other plans built Japan. That's where you get friends. That's how you defeat an ideology, by defeating militarily those who impose the ideology and then having looking to the future. And look, you know, I think the Marshall Plan was too generous to Germany too quickly, but that's a moral point. Empirically, it succeeded. It succeeded. The reason for it is we wanted to keep Germany out of the hands of the Soviet Union. That succeeded too, but I think we, you know, compromised a little bit on morality. I don't think the Germans were punished enough for their complicity in the worst genocide in the history of humankind. All right, let's see what the letters show today. Well, I guess most of the letters were about the show and the anti-Semitism documents and material that I showed. Those of you who haven't seen yesterday's show, please watch it. I mean, the enthusiastic response warrants anybody who missed it watching it. The letters, I'm not going to read all the letters, but, you know, please contribute this to a museum. It's so important. This should be taught in schools. Students or protesters should be required to see some of the documents to see what they're part of. You left out Soviet newspapers, and it's true. The Soviet Union, after the Second World War, under Stalin, murdered Jews, and in the 30s they murdered Jews too, and were very anti-Semitic. I debated a member of this, a lawyer from the Soviet Union on Soviet anti-Semitism, and I produced lots and lots of documentation that was sponsored by the Soviet Union, and almost all the letters said, you know, please do it again and show us more of your collection. So I will, once every few months, I will try to do a show based on, I love my collection. You know, I'm a collector. I've, you know, when I was a kid, I was collecting, you know, bottle caps, and I collected everything. Of course, baseball cards, and of course, comic books. And I have a shirt that said I used to be a millionaire, and then my mother sold my baseball cards. She did. She didn't sell them. She gave them away to my cousin, some cousin. I don't know where they are, but, you know, I had a great baseball card collection, a great comic book collection. I didn't have, you know, number one Superman or Action Comics, but I had a lot of Superman, Batman, Archie comics as a kid. So I was always a collector. And as soon as I had a little money in the bank, I decided to always collect historical documents. And so I have a great collection of historical documents, and I'll show more of them as they become relevant in the future. One point somebody made, and it was an important point, that I talked about Alexander Hamilton and how he had Jewish clients, and it's true, but Alexander Hamilton had another connection to Jews. In fact, there's a book written about Hamilton. It's called Hamilton's Jewish World. Hamilton was brought up Jewishly. He was not a Jew religiously or ethnically, but he went to Jewish elementary school because his mother had been married to a Jewish man named Levine, basically a Sephardic Jew, and not his father. His father was a British man named Hamilton, but he was born out of wedlock, and therefore the Christian school wouldn't accept him. So he got his elementary school education in Jewish school, and apparently was fairly familiar with the Old Testament and with some Jewish prayers and stuff, and always had a fondness in his heart for Jews. He was a Christian, a practicing Christian, and a devoted Christian, as was the rest of his family. And he was buried. You can see his grave in the beautiful church downtown New York near Wall Street, which contains the grave of several of our founding fathers, including Hamilton. But Hamilton did have a Jewish elementary school education, and I forgot to mention that. Final letter. I remember when there was a center. It's a great letter. And he basically goes on to commend me for kind of always understanding all sides of all issues. Not reading that part of it, but it is a great worry that the center is being pushed out by the extremes of both the right and the left today, much more dangerously on the left. And we'll talk about that more as time goes on. But we live in dangerous times, and we have to take very seriously developments that are occurring. And for those of you who have asked me, has my red line been crossed? This is the red line. And if it is crossed by the Biden administration, I will abide by my commitment and not support those who have crossed my red line. And I'm sure it's a red line for many of you as well. So I hope it hasn't been crossed, and I hope there's still a possibility that Israel can remain a bipartisan issue, but it's moving away from that. And that's a very dangerous development, both for the United States and for Israel. See you next week.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.